Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined today by good friend of the show, good friend of myself personally, and co-host of the official Lakers podcast, Aaron Larsoul. Aaron, how you holding up? We are. I feel like we're at that part of the year or the week, right, where we're actually like fully outcasting it with numbers on the wall that we scraped in there. Number of days till Lakers, till the Lakers and basketball returns.
Right. So, yeah, I get a lot of basketball during the year. I go to just about every game home, and I go to every home game, and I'm at quite a few road games. I'm fortunate enough to get to go see the team on the road almost all the time. And so kind of in the moment, often it feels like, I'd like a little break. And yesterday hit me. You know, the All-Star game was kind of interesting and at times compelling. The whole weekend was at times. And then yesterday it really hit me that we don't have basketball for yesterday 3 days and then Lakers basketball for 4 days. So I put, I had that Cookie Monster on the toilet lighting up with the NBA meme up yesterday because I'm already jonesing. I need hoops. I don't have a lot going on in my life. I need hoops back.
Yeah, I'm the same with you. My poor wife has had to speak to me for now 2 days in a row, and it's not going well. It's just not going well.
No, I'm going to leave you alone and talk about what it would be like to live with you. But that actually happens a lot when guys in all sports, but specifically basketball, like, you know, when they retire and they move home and their wives are like, couldn't you play again? And
right.
Like, I'm not used to this. Get out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm definitely ready. Friday, even Thursday, I'll take whatever I can get Thursday, but Friday can't come soon enough.
You talked about the All-Star weekend, and I got to ask, like, as a fellow Aaron, how badly did you feel for Aaron Gordon getting robbed in the dunk contest?
So I kind of have a hot take for you.
Oh, no. Throw another Aaron under the bus?
No. Okay. No. I thought, like, over the course of the entire contest that the right guy won. I thought airplane mode. I thought he was the best dunker over the entire night. Mm-hmm. However, once they started handing out those 50s so freely,
yeah,
there was no way that his dunk or Aaron Gordon's dunk in the tiebreaker, I think, was it actually the second tiebreaker, the face-off round? The second one, those both should have gotten 50s too. Obviously, there were some shenanigans going on with the scorekeeping and, uh-huh, and D-Wade, I think, with the Heat, mm-hmm, the hometown Heat. Discount on Aaron Gordon's dunk, artificially lowering the score. They said they weren't going to have it be a tie. I thought it should have been a tie. Just like, you know, as freely as they were giving out 50. Now, look, I thought, like, we'll get back to the Lakers here for a second. I thought Dwight was pretty good. I thought his first dunk was kind of interesting. The second one, the Kobe tribute, all of that, was, you know, it was really nice to see. And he said afterwards that Kobe had agreed to be a part of that. But that was a dunk that Dwight Howard does like once or twice a week in Lakers games. Obviously, he doesn't catch it from Jameer Nelson standing behind the backboard thrown over to him. But the dunk itself is something that Dwight Howard does pretty regularly during the season. That got a 49. So having the two dunks in the finals get a 48 and a 47 just kind of felt off to me.
Yeah.
Plus, it robbed us. Like, if you're not going to let him tie, give him 50s. Let him keep going.
Right.
They'd
still be dunking.
Right. Let's see what else we got.
They would still be there right now. It would turn into the layup contest eventually because their legs would get tired. But they would still be there right now, I think.
Like playing horse in high school and elementary school. Left-handed layups.
Yeah. I thought Dwight could have taken off from further back. I think he kind of sold himself a little short from the takeoff spot. And I think if he does that, like, he actually probably would have benefited from throwing the ball through the rim again the way that he did the first time.
Yeah. Well, yes. But he's also a 34-year-old man.
He's wild.
As someone who is actually significantly older than that and has had my share of back injuries, surgeries, problems, et cetera, that'll take a little bit of the athleticism from you. The 2012 Dwight or 2010, that was 2010 Dwight, I think. It was 2010 he did it? Yeah. 2010 Dwight versus 2019, 25-year-old Dwight versus 34-year-old Dwight with the back surgery mixed in. That'll take some of that bounce from you.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy that he was still able to do that in the first place. I actually think Dwight, because he did this back in 2010 where he got hit a little bit, where I don't think people recognize in the moment that he put the sticker up in 2010, right, up on the backboard. And I think this time, I don't think people register how difficult it is to slow your spin down, speed it back up, and dunk it again.
Like, so I was really... You're talking about his first dunk?
Yeah, the first dunk that he had.
I thought that was actually one of the more impressive dunks of the night.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good. And look, I think there is a flaw in the judging. Like, do we need Chadwick Boseman and Candace Parker, you know, and like Common out there? Like,
yeah, none of them. Dominique Wilkins Jordan Neek in there?
I think it should be people who either, like, you know, obviously can't do that specifically, but have been dunkers and even competition dunkers throughout their career, so they know what they're watching. You know, right. Candace Parker, I'm sure, can dunk or has in her life, mm-hmm. but, like, not like that, right?
Right.
And probably there's, what, you know, six people on planet Earth that can do what Derek Jones Jr. and Aaron Gordon were doing, but people that can get close to that, or at least at one time in their life could.
Yeah.
But they can kind of, they know what they're looking for. They know how difficult it is.
Yeah. I want current players in on the voting.
Well, the judging. So I was talking to somebody, I don't even remember who it was, but I was talking to somebody yesterday or Sunday, and they suggested having past winners, like whoever's not competing, whoever's won, you know, like the five previous winners that aren't competing.
Yeah.
They're doing, you know, because then it's kind of
like
temporary.
It.
Yeah.
I
thought that. Or there was a picture going around Twitter, and it was like, I don't remember what year it was, but it was like, it was Kobe and Jordan and Dominique and Dr. J and somebody else. So like that kind of mm-hmm. panel work too. But yeah, they need to,
Poor Chadwick Boseman didn't even want to be there.
No, I don't, he doesn't seem like he wants to be anywhere these days.
Yeah.
Everywhere he goes, he has to do the Wakanda forever.
Yeah, he dies a little bit every time he does that.
He seems like he would rather do just about anything else. Now, to be fair, I wanted to watch that, I don't know, what was it, like 21 Bridges or something, his last one. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to watch that, but I haven't yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've seen any other movie he's ever been in. So to be fair, I get why people are so into it. And because at the time it was meaningful and kind of groundbreaking, et cetera. So I get it, but yeah, you're right. He does appear to die inside every time he's asked to do the little arms crossed thing.
Yeah, like you actually saw the bubble above his head when they were like, Chadwick Boseman, and he was like, ah, I got to do the thing.
Here
we go.
Time.
Yeah. Oh. There, you guys happy?
Years ago, right? Like, can we be done with this?
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about the Lakers.
Hey!
Today's show is brought to you in part by the Arizona Board of Tourism. I went to visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining. And they have this really cool trip planner here. You can click on whichever team that you want to see the most of. Obviously, for me personally, it's the Dodgers. You can set when you're going to be there, your start date and your end date, and they'll figure out the schedule of their games and whatever makes the most sense for you in your trip out there. And then obviously, while you're there, you can check out all the hiking, the biking, the food, the bars, the music scene, the spa scene, anything else that you might need. And it's the best time of year to go out there. Weather-wise, it's just perfect. Out here in Austin, we've been dealing with, I think today, it went from 80 degrees in the morning to about 57 degrees by the time the sun finally set. And out there in Arizona, you got nice 72-degree weather. It's fairly predictable, and it's repeatable, too. So that makes it easier to plan your trip as well. So again, head on over to visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, visitarizona.com/springtraining to start planning your trip today. All right, so we are now, we got the All-Star stuff behind us. It was a really fun weekend, though, like in complete honesty. I'm snarky about everything, but that was one of my favorite All-Star weekends ever. What I wanted to talk to you about, Aaron, let's start here. Where are the Lakers compared to your expectations for the team heading into the season?
So we actually talked about this. I talked about this with Trudell on our podcast quite a bit.
The official Lakers podcast.
The official Lakers podcast. We had similar win total expectations. I think he was a slightly more optimistic than I was. But I thought the Lakers would win 51 to 53-ish games in the regular season. I thought the Lakers would be were one of the favorites to win the West and win the NBA title, but I didn't think they were going to be this good in the regular season. I didn't think that they would care as much. I didn't think they would want to have the number one seed as much. I thought Denver was going to be the best team because of the continuity. I thought Denver was going to be the best team in the West in the regular season, but I thought the Lakers would probably be a 3 or 4 seed. But then after that first loss to the Clippers and then, you know, going on that nice little win streak to start the year, combined with, I'm fortunate enough to get to travel with the team and be around a lot. So combined with what I saw from the chemistry, which really is a real thing, my expectations very early on this year were raised pretty significantly. So I thought like 51 to 53 wins coming into the year. And then after a week or two, I raised that to probably 55, 56. But it looks like that may be even a little bit pessimistic. I may be selling them short. So at this point, I think, you know, low 60s win total is very well within reach. And I fully expect the Lakers to get the number one seed.
Yeah, it kind of dawned on me. I tweeted this out right before the show, right before we started recording. It's kind of hitting me that, okay, so if the Lakers just maintain their current win pace, we're probably best off rooting for the Clippers to start winning some games so that they get into the 2 or 3 spot.
Right.
I don't want to see the Clippers in the 4 spot because that means you have to now face them in the second round. I'm going to feel a little dirty rooting for the Clippers, though. I can't lie. It's going to be a little weird.
So you and I have talked about this, and Pete and I argue about this, and jump in, argue about this all the time. When the Celtics and Clippers play, I generally root for the Celtics, which it's kind of split. Earlier in the year, I was catching a lot of flack for it, but in this last game, before the break, it was more 50-50. And I understand Laker fans, longtime Lakers fans, it's just like the Clippers have never even been thought of, and the Celtics, it just makes their skin crawl to want anything positive to happen to the Celtics or the Celtics. Yeah. But like the primary enemy at this point, the first enemy, let's say, is the Clippers. And
the enemy that actually matters this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, Boston, maybe the Celtics do something surprising and come out of the East. But for right now, the biggest threat right now to me is the Clippers. So anything bad that happens to the Clippers, I am in full favor of. So, I mean, look, well, let's really root for it. Let's see if we can get the Clippers down to 6. Let's really see what we can do.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. 2-3. Obviously, hey, hopefully 3, because that means if the standings hold about how they are now, that would mean that Denver going to Denver in the second round. And obviously Denver's really good at home and the altitude, so maybe that takes a little something out of the Clippers. Yeah, 4-5 would be, I think 3, Lakers fans should be rooting for the Clippers to be 3. I frankly think the Clippers are the biggest threat to the Lakers in the playoffs. So, even like as dirty as that sounds, I think we kind of want them to sort of maintain their current positioning. Although, who does that mean? Like, who do you want 4 or 5?
Utah. I'm really not afraid of Utah. Sorry, David. My boss is, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but your team doesn't scare me at all.
Well, you're not afraid of those Rudy Gobert screen assist triple doubles.
I'm extremely not afraid of Robert Sacre Blue.
Baguette Boban. I think the most dangerous teams in the playoffs as it relates to the Lakers, I would put the Clippers 1 and Houston 2. So
yeah, now Houston. You know, Houston with this experiment.
And now actually they're right there, you know, kind of Houston and OKC and Dallas are all kind of fight. So, you know, if we get like Utah and OKC 4 or 5, I'd be good with that.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, to this point, we've only kind of considered the Lakers in the one spot being important just from the standpoint of, like, well, you get home court advantage. Like, that's all going to be important. But I think there's going to be a significant drop-off from the 7th seed to the 8th seed. It makes that being in the one spot really important, I think. I don't want to play Dallas. I don't want to play OKC. I don't want to play Houston. But if, like, it's Portland in that 8th spot, I'll take that happily.
Well, I think Portland is dangerous, although they now with Dame's injury, and then also I think they're 4 or 5 games back. And speaking of Gobert with the goaltend there. So the fact that that game was stolen from them, and Dame is going to now, there's the long All-Star break. So his 1 week to 2 week time frame, he may only miss a game or two coming back. Mm-hmm. But I think that is probably the death knell in Portland's playoff chances. Yeah. I think it probably is going to be Memphis. And although Portland, because of Dame, because of CJ, and just their explosiveness, and if they get Nurkic back and Collins and all of that, they would be the team I would fear most in the 18. And I would probably fear Portland more than even OKC at this point. But I think it really is going to be Memphis, and they just don't have, you know, look, Ja's explosive and Triple J is, you know, can play, but they're so young. They don't have any playoff experience there. So I think that would be I'll be nice and say gentleman sweep, but I don't think that would be more than 5 games at the most.
Yeah.
So I think there is kind of a division between the top 7 and then the 8. So I think that very much matters. You take care of business as quickly as you can in the playoffs. Saw last year with the Warriors with, you know, Clay being hurt and with Durant being hurt and all, you just kind of, you don't want any of those extra games. And that game, I think it was game 3. I think the Warriors went up 2-0 and then came to LA. And in game 3, the Warriors had that 31-point lead and lost it. And then, you know, it extended the series against the Clippers. And all of that extra mileage adds up. Maybe that was a contributing factor to Durant's injury. And then obviously Boogie got hurt in the playoffs again and Clay. So when you get the chance in the playoffs, you as quickly as you can, just, you know, to take it out. So I think the fact that the Lakers being the one seed means they would get by far the easiest first round matchup, I think really maybe even matters more than, you know, having home court, to be honest.
Yeah, probably. I think ideally, the Clippers getting to the 3 spot, and if Houston can somehow sit at the 6 spot, I think that would make Laker fans the happiest. I think that's the situation that the Lakers
is,
really need.
You can see me because we're on Skype here, but this is an audio medium that we're dealing with here, but I'm going to do the chef's kiss. I am bringing my fingers up right now.
That would be ideal. So how far the Lakers have exceeded our expectations to this point, do you think that recalibrates the expectations moving forward?
Do you mean for the regular season or for the playoffs?
Well, just what this team is capable of and kind of what you consider a successful season.
What I consider a successful season is winning a championship. I think because, look, any team that has LeBron James and Anthony Davis on it, I think it has a deep playoff run or bust mentality.
Yeah.
Kind of by nature, especially, you know, LeBron went to a million straight finals. I know it was in the East, but went to a million straight finals. And I thought the Lakers going into the year were going to be better in the playoffs than the regular season. I thought that I think some of the issues that the team has had were kind of predictable. You know, the secondary playmaking, and the wing defense have been, you know, have crept up here and there. The wing defense, the secondary playmaking, I think is something that Lakers fans, focus on, but I think that's less of an issue. You know, obviously there's much consternation over the Rajon Rondo minutes, but I think that matters less in the playoffs than the wing defense.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
Specifically because LeBron is going to play more minutes in the playoffs, whether that's, you know, 4 or 6 or 8 more when it really matters than he's playing now. So I think that kind of mitigates some of the problems of the secondary ball handler, because when LeBron's on the floor, it's going to be LeBron handling the ball. So, I thought some of those issues were kind of predictable, and they've popped up here and there. So that's what worried me about a deep playoff run. It still worries me a little bit, but they are just a better basketball team than I thought they were going to be. You know, the KCP has been a really pleasant surprise. Yeah. Dwight has been a revelation. So I think they're just better than I thought they were going to be. I still, you know, gun to my head, I still think it comes down to the Lakers and Clippers at some point. Houston, as I mentioned earlier, just the variance with all the 3-point shooting and all the switching and trapping that you don't see regularly. So it's going to be tough to prepare for. I think once you have more time in the playoffs to scout it and see it a couple times, I think the Lakers, Clippers, whoever will find ways to attack it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it will be as big of a problem, but you know, for the Lakers playing Houston right after the, right after the trade deadline, the Rockets were able to force the Lakers to kind of play their game. Yeah. And the Lakers have won a lot of basketball games by just bludgeoning people and being bigger and more athletic in the front line with Dwight and JaVale and Anthony Davis than everybody else. And Dwight and JaVale only played 20 minutes combined in that game.
Yep.
And generally, if a team that plays a strange style can dictate how the game is being played, you know, going back to D'Antoni's Phoenix teams, going back to the Don Nelson Warriors teams, you know, with the We Believe when they beat Dirk and those Mavs, or obviously the past few years with the Warriors is a different example. But if those kind of teams, those small teams, can force you to play their way, their small guys are better than your small guys generally. So if Houston can force, you know, the Clippers or the Lakers or Denver or whoever to play small, they're going to give people problems. So I think once the playoffs start and once you get a chance to kind of scout that more and all of that, I think it's less of a problem. But that's a long way of saying I thought that the Lakers, I thought the Clippers were the favorites going into the year to win the title. And I had the Lakers right there with Milwaukee and with Philly. And I would put the Lakers
right there. Philly.
Yeah, well. Yeah, although I still think they could be a problem. I still think they're going to be a problem in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think there's an elite defense. I haven't given up on them yet. I think there's still an elite defense in there somewhere that they haven't quite found yet. And the spacing stuff with Horford and Embiid and Simmons has been kind of a disaster on offense thus far. But to answer your question, I think the Lakers are right there with the Clippers, if not a slight step above as the favorites to win the whole thing. Now, look, all of this is contingent on health for everybody. But I thought the Lakers were a step, like a half step behind the Clippers as title favorites going into the year. And I think they are right there with them or a half step above at this point.
That's interesting. I still have them slightly behind the Clippers because I've seen more of what I think the Clippers' best lineup might be. But I do think the Marcus Morris thing is kind of overcomplicates it more than people think. Let's take another quick second here when we come back.
One thing on that, though, is I think the Clippers' ceiling possibly is the highest. Although I keep talking about, because I'm around the guys so much, I keep talking about the chemistry. And the Lakers' chemistry and the Clippers' lack of chemistry, I think, may matter at some point. And the other reason I think, like, even the on-court chemistry matters. Whatever you think the Clippers' best lineup is, whether you think it includes Morris or not, they haven't, just because of how many games Kawhi hasn't played, whether he's load managing or, you know, being actually injured, and then Paul George has been in and out. Pat Beverly has had his hamstring, you know, he's tweaked it now 3 times. He's missed time 4 times. So whatever you think the Clippers' best lineup is, those guys just don't have the reps together that any of the Lakers' best lineups are going to have. So I think that, and then the fact that the Clippers just, look, I'm not there. I don't see it every day like I do with the Lakers. But the Clippers just don't seem to really like each other.
Yeah.
There was the reporting about how there's some kind of strife over Kawhi running things and Montrez and Lou Williams and Pat Bev, the kind of old guard, you know, they were used to doing something their way and now it's different and they played a different way last year. So I think all of that may matter at some point and may cost the Clippers a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, I kind of kicked myself because I didn't think of this heading into the year, but those guys who won all those games, like the math on the Clippers was always, holy crap, you have like a, basically a 50-win team, and you're adding Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to it. Yes, you're losing SGA, but in theory, you're adding two perennial all-stars, all NBA type players to a team that won basically 50 games last year. Oh my God, they're going to be incredible. But we kind of overlooked, I thought, the impact that those guys who did win all those games, you know, on the impact on those guys, because they're going to have smaller roles. How are those guys going to accept it? And we've seen so far this year, they haven't really liked that. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk about, you've kind of alluded to a couple different points here. We're going to bring all that together, given how the buyout market has kind of gone for the Lakers so far. Because I think there's an important point that can't be undersold here. With my daughter's chiming in, she's not thrilled with how the.
What does she think? She's not thrilled with the buyout market thus far.
She really wanted DeMar Carroll. So let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll talk about some of how the Lakers are approaching both the trade deadline and the buyout market. Yeah, since we moved into this new house, Avery has made a couple of appearances on the show, and one has been now this most recent example where she chimed in on the buyout market, and then Harrison had a good time laughing at, we were just having a Rondo conversation, and she cried for basically the entirety of it, so she takes after her dad.
Yes, well. Yeah, and I know she's scouring all the advanced stats and numbers on all the possible additions to the Lakers roster. She definitely has a future in scouting.
Yeah, she's one day. All right, so basically where we left off, or the points that we've kind of alluded to at this point, is that the Lakers have incredible chemistry, yet they do still have some needs on their roster. I agree with you completely that the need for a secondary ball handler is a little lessened by the way that the Lakers are probably going to play in the playoffs, but they do still need probably a wing defender. We've seen some wings come and go on the buyout market, and obviously the Lakers didn't make a move for the guys who got moved at the trade deadline. I guess the question is, how are the Lakers basically in a spot where they have to balance the effect that whoever they add or lose would have on chemistry versus what they would bring as an actual basketball player?
Yes. I think you said that very well. The Lakers chemistry is a real thing. I've been around a lot of basketball teams, 11, 12 years, something like that. And this is a unique situation as it relates to the chemistry. How much does that matter? Well, it matters.
We'll never know. we know it matters, but we'll never know exactly how much. Yeah,
exactly. So I think you said it right. I think that both in a trade deadline and then in the buyout market, it's a comparison between how much can said free agent help on the basketball court versus what is the possible effect? And you don't know, right? Rob Pelinka did an incredible job of putting this roster together. Obviously, first place in the West, so the talent on the floor has come together very well. But also, whatever the secret sauce is in the locker room, he got that right also. Perhaps you could say even he got that more right than the on-court stuff. So you do have to, you know, kind of compare and make an educated guess as to what that person will bring on the court and what the effect. And it doesn't necessarily mean it would be a negative effect, but there will be some effect.
There's some risk, yeah.
Chemistry. And so you kind of have to constantly weigh that in and have that be a balancing act, because the chemistry is a real thing. And it is my opinion. This is not anybody else's. This has not come from anywhere. This is not sourced or anything like that. But I'm around management a lot and ownership and of course the team quite a bit. And my suspicion is that the Lakers may not do anything and aren't going to and shouldn't do anything unless the powers that be, unless the scouting department and Rob and everybody is really sure that it is going to be such an upgrade on the court that you're willing to take a possible hit mm-hmm. to chemistry. And I don't think you do that for incremental change on the court. I think you have to really be sure that it's going to matter.
I think this is where Rob Pelinka's background becomes interesting. And, you know, obviously everybody knows he's a former agent. And as an agent, your job is to find your clients the best situation, not just from a basketball standpoint, but from a human being standpoint, right? From a personality standpoint. And you have mm-hmm. to weigh the benefits that certain situations might have on your client, the person. And I think him kind of taking this approach and valuing chemistry as much as he does, I don't think that's a coincidence given his background. And you kind of compare that across the league to somebody like Daryl Morey, who cares a lot less about chemistry, right? See, Danny Ainge, same kind of thing, where he sees his players as more assets than people. And that's an oversimplification, but here we are. And you kind of see how the Lakers are approaching this, where they're caring a lot more about the intangible stuff than, say, the Rockets do or the Celtics do or some of the other more analytically driven organizations do. I think that's an interesting dynamic here with Pelinka specifically.
So I agree with that. I think it's also, I think one of the things that, in addition to you know, recommendations from Kobe that had a lot to do with it. I think one of the things that gave the Lakers confidence in having Rob Pelinka be, you know, one of the main decision makers when Magic was around, but now the decision maker, is the success that the Warriors had and Bob Myers had, who has a kind of a similar background to. Mm-hmm. They both played in college. They were both agents. Obviously, Danny Ainge played in the NBA, but so I think that gives guys that have played and have been agents, I think it kind of gives them an insight into how much the locker room matters and how much the situation matters, more so than if you just played, because they have to, you know, Bob Myers and Rob Pelinka in their careers as agents have had to consider, is, you know, obviously the on-court fit, but is my client going to be happy here? Mm-hmm. And the Warriors are well known to have had a really great culture there and playing with joy and all of that stuff. And the same has been true here with the Lakers, especially this year. I think they have noticed, and Rob has noticed, in his first year as the sole decision maker or the primary decision maker in constructing this roster, that chemistry really does matter. And he's done a great job of, obviously, of putting all of that together. And by the way, shout out to Coach Vogel too, because mm-hmm. you know, whatever you think of the rotations, it is working, because I don't know of anybody, you know, you tend to take perhaps a more negative view what? Of these than I do. Yeah. I mean, like, I think it would be fair to describe you as snarky, right?
A little,
but even people who tend more negative, or people that have an axe to grind, or people that are outside looking in from other organizations or fans of other teams, I don't know of anybody. And I can confirm that it is the truth, and it is not just me blowing smoke, that there haven't been any cracks in the chemistry. And so combine the fact that he's pushing all the right buttons and the fact that the Lakers are the number one seed in the West, whatever Coach Vogel, look, you know, Pelinka gave him the raw materials to work with, but Coach Vogel, I think, deserves, and Coach Kidd and Phil Handy and Coach Hollins and all, I think they deserve a lot of credit also for, you know, pushing the right buttons so that the chemistry is intact and the team is winning.
Yeah, no, I it's fascinating here because, you know, as we've moved further into the analytic era of sports, it's not just basketball, chemistry and more intangible stuff has tended to fall by the wayside. And mm-hmm. we're going to probably see some version of an experiment here where the Lakers say, you know what, we want to see what we have here. We don't want to mess with the chemistry. Maybe the Lakers don't make a move here either at the deadline or in the buyout market. And then you compare that to some of the teams that did make moves in those settings. And now it's not going to be some grand statement as to who was right or wrong or whatever. It's just a one season sample size or whatever. But it is going to be fascinating to watch this kind of take place over the remainder of the season. And look, I also think the wing defense thing, I don't think that's something that can be fixed in-house, right? Like, they don't have the player that would normally do that. They don't have the big athletic wing who would be able to slow down, and I say slow down by relative terms, the Kawhis, the Paul Georges, the Giannises, or whatever. But
yeah, but like, who does? There are 29 other NBA teams that, you know, everybody is looking for big athletic wings, defenders. Right. So everybody wants that. Those guys are generally not available on the buyout market. Those are the guys that make the big money in free agency. Those are, in this NBA, those tend to be the best players in the world. You know, apologies to James Harden and Steph, but like, the best players in the world are...
No need to apologize to Steph.
We're Kevin Durant, who's injured. And, you know, Kevin Durant's injured, but like, the best players in the world are Kevin Durant and LeBron and Kawhi and, you know, Paul George and Anthony Davis, who, to kind of bring it back full circle, I think I think LeBron's going to play a bunch more minutes in the playoffs, so the secondary ball handling and creation is less of an issue than it is in the regular season. But I also think in the highest leverage moments in the playoffs, I think you are going to see Anthony Davis unlocked defensively. He's done some of it this year and has been efficient at it. I think you are going to see him guarding wings more in the playoffs, which will help, again, mitigate some of that. Especially in lineups where Dwight or JaVale are playing, so you still have that rim protection, and that kind of unlocks and allows AD to play some wing defense. I think there are definitely going to be times. Danny Green will probably a lot also, but in a potential series with the Clippers, I think there are going to be definite stretches where LeBron is on Paul George or Kawhi, and AD is on the other. I think you definitely see some of that. We haven't seen a lot of it this year. We've seen AD is capable of it, guarding some of those guys. You know, he's done well on Luka for stretches. So I think you're going to see some of that in the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, look, if the Lakers, if a capable wing defender, big wing, landed in their laps, yeah, I mean, I think it's something you have to look at, because that is and was going into the year a concern. But those guys, you know, those guys that can really play, they're just not generally available because everybody wants them and they're the best players in the world.
Yeah, I think there's a stat where guys on it's been X amount of years since a player picked up on the buyout market has played, you know, or averaged more than like 15 or 17 minutes per game in the playoffs. Like, we haven't seen that in a really long time. And it makes sense, right? Because otherwise, those guys would already be on playoff teams.
Right. So, like, in the most valuable position, which these days in the NBA is wings are generally the most valuable, especially ball handling wings and guys that can, and then the guys that can defend those guys. Usually buyout guys are guys on teams that generally aren't going anywhere. And those teams aren't going anywhere because they generally don't have the best players, and the best players are those guys. So, you know, Houston is rumored to have made a couple moves. You know, those guys, the guys they're getting are fine, but you know, if they were real impact players, they're not getting bought out generally, not always the case, but generally.
Yeah.
So, I think it is somewhat unlikely that the Lakers find somebody good enough that is going to tip that chemistry calculus in the favor of bringing somebody in. Not impossible. I just think it's less likely than likely.
Yeah. Look, the other thing to point out here too is that we're recording this at 1 my time, 11 your time, and over the next, you know, 48, 72 hours, who knows what moves are going to be made. That the Lakers might get involved in. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But overall, look, it's hard to argue with the team in the West with a 5-game in the loss column lead over the second place team in the West.
Five over Denver and 6 over the Clippers. Is that right?
Something like that. In just in the loss column, yeah. It's hard to tell that team, hey, no, what you guys are doing is wrong, right? So,
I think it's fair. Like, the one thing that's fair about it is the game in the regular season and the game in the playoffs are different. And require, you know, somewhat different things. And I think the, as you and I have been alluding to the last few minutes here, I think, I don't know if it's the answer to that, but the Lakers' answer to that is, okay, well, we still have LeBron and AD. So secondary ball handling, playmaking, well, a lot of that is, if not solved, certainly mitigated by the fact LeBron is going to be playing more minutes. And, you know, the wing defense and a big athletic wing defender, okay, well, here's a guy that Anthony Davis that can do it. We haven't had too much in the regular season, but in the playoffs can do that more.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, they have, you know, a future Hall of Famer in Alex Caruso to always lean on as well.
So. Well, we actually talked about it on our podcast about, I think the thing that is most special about Caruso, and I think he should and hopefully will play more in the playoffs, because I think one thing that the Lakers do suffer from a little bit, and it kind of goes into that wing defense, is other than the big guys, it's not a particularly athletic team. Mm-hmm. And Alex Caruso is, other than LeBron, probably, I'm separating the big guys, he's probably the Lakers' best athlete. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he is also, you know, one of the guys that thinks the game the best allows him to be, and, you know, he's a little undersized for a wing, but, you know, he's kind of a tweener between a guard and a wing, size-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His brain and the fact that he knows what he should be doing and where he should be, combined with his athleticism, which allows him to get to those places on time, maybe even a beat before on time, allows him to make plays that, frankly, nobody else other than LeBron on the Lakers roster can make. So I think he is going to be a part of that conversation in the playoffs also. Future Hall of Famer, maybe, like, he's the GOAT. AC is the GOAT.
Yeah.
Future Hall of Famer, I think it might be, you're not wrong. I just think it might be 1 year. You're like an early adopter.
A little early.
Like 1 year early for that.
I just want to be one of those, like, indie band fans that says, like, I believed in this guy before he blew up.
Right, you're the first one getting the 80-inch TV, the flat 80-inch 4K TV that's $28,000.
Yeah.
And then a year later, it'll be $2,800. 2 years later, it'll be $280.
Yeah, I have a computer that crashes regularly on me, but what, like, this 80-screen TV is amazing, and I have no place to put it, so... Yeah.
Well, hopefully there is a place to put it in the playoffs. In the Alex Caruso is an 80-inch TV.
I'm telling you.
12 years ago. yeah, hopefully there is a place to put it in the playoffs. I suspect he's going to play well. You know, Coach Vogel kind of joked around after the Denver game to end the first, quote unquote, first half of the season, the last game before the break, how he was the secret weapon, and hopefully he's going to be a little bit less of a secret. I was tongue-in-cheek, but hopefully he will be a little bit less of a secret as we continue this season and get into the playoffs.
That'd make my life a lot easier. I'd get more sleep and stuff. It would be great. It would be fun.
It would make your life easier. It would probably make you happier, but I don't know if it would make your life easier. You get to fire off those snarky.
I'd lose like 25% of my jokes. Yeah.
Right. What would you do on Twitter? If you got to come down from on high and put the rotation, the Lakers regular season and then playoff rotation exactly as you wanted, what would you do on Twitter?
Ah, man, I'd probably have to stop tweeting, right? Like, that would be it.
And then what if you were wrong?
Then I'd really have to stop tweeting. I'd really have to delete. That'd be it. I'd have to retire. I'd have to go into hiding. Yeah. I'd have to come back looking like Alex Caruso, like with the thinning hair. That's how Harrison actually got to look the way he did.
Headband or no?
White guys in headbands just doesn't work out. It's just, it never looks good, ever.
Yeah, I'm trying to, yeah, I'm going back in like the mental Rolodex. I'm trying to go back in time and see if I can come up with any, and I don't know that, yeah, I don't know that I have any.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't really work out, so.
Larry Hughes, like circa 1998 2000, 2001, 2002, Larry Hughes is the GOAT of headbands.
Yeah.
With those straight backs,
remember,
those rows.
Remember for a while people were crossing over the headbands?
I do.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
That's a look like that. The ninja headband. The fact that that was ever just allowed was just criminal.
That was not good. I even back in the day, I used to have the straight backs. I used to have some rows back in the day.
No way.
I would even be so bold as to on occasion go in gay. I went playing, you know, uh-huh. pick up whatever. I would go do rag and headband over the rag.
Oh man, that was a look.
That was a long time ago.
I can't quite pull off that look.
I don't think that would work for you. I don't think that would work. I love you, brother, but I don't think that would work for you.
There's some incriminating evidence of me. Visors were, I got way too into visors in high school.
I see that for you. By the way, can we once and for all, what is that? Wow, we're getting in the weeds here. Mm-hmm. But you and I haven't gotten to talk about this. You and I haven't talked about this offline or on the podcast. What is the story with that video of you attempting a Euro step ish and a layup kinda?
It was. What's the story with that? All right. I didn't know I was being taped. Two, I was very round. I've since lost weight since that thing. And then three, Stephen A. Smith had a way worse attempt on Twitter yesterday. Did you see that?
I saw him.
Avery's crying now, thinking about the athlete that she's eventually going to be.
she's sad. Damn it. Mom just showed her the video in question. I saw Stephen A. Smith. He had a nice little hesitation, nice little crossover spin move, and then missed a layup. I did see that.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, it was more fluid than what I saw from you. And he made a couple jumpers, too. He made a couple, although he wasn't willing to stand at the NBA. He wasn't willing to stand at the Ruffles line.
Mm-hmm.
He was only going, a couple steps in from that. So, yeah. I did see that. I don't know if I'm willing to call it worse than what I saw, the video evidence of what I saw from you.
Mine hit the rim.
That's fair. That's fair. And you look now as I'm looking at you on Skype, you look like you are far more of an athlete now than in that fateful day.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Margaritas were also involved, which like, you know.
That would help my game.
Well, I think it helps to a certain point, and then I crossed that point, lapped it a couple times, and then shot that layup, and it didn't work out.
It helped until it doesn't?
Yeah, it helped. It was like, it helped in the way that it gave me confidence to do something I could not do, and then it didn't help in executing that move. So, that's where we are. Aaron, this has been a lot of fun. I'm pissed at myself for waiting this long to have you on the show. If you guys want to check out Aaron and Mike Trudell, you can do so on the Official Lakers Podcast. It's great content. You guys you're gonna want to check out that stuff. Aaron, you're welcome on here anytime you could possibly want to.
Hey, you know how to find. I ain't tough to find. You know how to get me. So whenever you want, I'm there.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Aaron. Everyone else here. What's that?
Yes, I said whenever I want, whenever you want, I'm there. To be more accurate, whenever you want, I'm here.
Yeah, no, you aren't in Austin, and you aren't enjoying this incredible weather that we have right now.
I do. I like Austin. Go Bears! I watched my California Golden Bears beat up Texas last time I was in Austin. Well, so that's go great. Bears!
I have now been arrested in Texas for you mentioning that on my show.
At DKR Stadium, I think they call it. The Texas came back and then missed an extra point. California 45, Texas 44.
Yep. All right. Well, I can't show my face in Texas anymore. I'm now moving back to California. I'm excited for that move all over again. Aaron, thanks a ton for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, brother.